From Georgia Public Broadcasting, it's On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Why are women poor? Well, we're exploring that question this hour. Women are overrepresented in low-paying jobs and 35% more likely to live in poverty. How is the wealth gap affecting you? You can leave us a voicemail at 404-500-9457 or find us on Twitter or Facebook at OST Talk. Shilpa Fadke joins us now to talk about how poverty affects women and families in Georgia. She's vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. We're speaking with her from her office. Hello, Shilpa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you recently co-authored a report on economic security for women and families in Georgia. This is a national issue, of course. In what ways is it a Southern problem?
Sure. So I think in the last several years, we've seen real progress talking about women and their families and opportunities for economic security and prosperity. There's a lot of talk around issues like equal pay, paid sick days, access to health care, access to affordable child care. And in many states and localities around the country, we've seen real progress. But in the South, there's really just a lot of work that is still needed to promote economic security and make sure that all families are able to get ahead. And there's a lot of interest there. And so I think if we think about women in Georgia in particular, we know that there's just still a significant wage gap. And that wage gap has lots of reasons, which we can get into. But until we sort of push through that, women and their families in Georgia just really won't see true equality.
So you mentioned the wage gap, but what are some of the other big factors that make women here more vulnerable than men when it comes to financial instability or insecurity?
Sure. So part of that is the wage gap, which, of course, disproportionately impacts women of color. If you look at black women, Latinas in Georgia, you know, they're earning 50 cents compared to every dollar that a white man earns. And over their lifetime, that's just compounded. So our report, you know, indicates that women in Georgia, because of the wage gap, are going to lose over $300,000 in their lifetime. It's a significant amount of money, and that's money that could be spent in securing retirement. It's funds that could get passed down to ensure economic mobility for their children and grandchildren. And as we think about those issues, there's a lot of reasons. It's the lack of paid family leave. It's a lack of quality, affordable child care. It's a lack of protections around gender-based violence, and that's sexual assault, sexual harassment. All of those issues together sort of combine to give us a status in Georgia that is really detrimental to the progress of women.
How many women in Georgia do work for minimum wage?
When you think about minimum wage, first of all, I think the most important thing to think about is that most of minimum wage workers are women. And to really understand that, you know, for example, I think it's one in four low-wage workers really are grappling with so many of the issues. So if you think about, I think it's 6 in 10 in Georgia are women, and that 2/3 of those workers are women, increasing the minimum wage just to $15 an hour would boost the wages for nearly 1 million women in Georgia and more than 23 million women around the country.
Well, Shilpa, now we're looking at, for a minimum wage worker in Georgia with tips, who make tips, $2.13 an hour, $15 an hour by 2024, sounds like a pretty big climb. Is that feasible in this state?
I think if we can make the case to talk about how the minimum wage will really help women and families and help support their families and get them out of poverty and get families on a track for success and opportunity, I think we can get there, but we have to tell a story, and we have to have people ready to understand the data, to understand what, you know, the increase in wages would do for their workforce and how it would really contribute to the state's economic security.
In the report, you also do write that in Georgia, mothers are the sole or primary or co-breadwinners in a majority of families, 66.3% of families. These numbers are higher for some women of color. So how does that affect their families?
Right. So if your household is headed by a woman that is bringing home, you know, the vast amount of resources for that family, and they then all of a sudden have an emergency caregiving, a sick spouse, a sick child, they become sick, a sick parent, there is no cushion. There is no ability for that family to sort of get by. And oftentimes the lack of caregiving supports, or, you know, coupled with potentially a healthcare crisis, can result in women having to leave the workforce. those gaps are challenging. They end up dipping into whatever savings they have, and they can't get out of it. And so I think as we think about these policies, we can't think about them in silos. We have to really think about how they are all connected to each other.
On the subject of policy, access to health care is one of the things that you highlight in your report. Greater access to health care is one place Georgia really needs to improve. So what is that relationship between health care and poverty?
I think we know that women need access to comprehensive health care so that they can thrive. And if we really want to ensure that families are thriving, we need to guarantee access to quality health care. You know, for example, Georgia has the sixth highest infant mortality rate. And maternal mortality is something we've been talking a lot about here at the Center for American Progress and around the country. And so, you know, if women are dying, if their children are dying, if they don't have access to high quality care, how can you expect, you know, a woman and their family to sort of take the economic steps that they would need to? And so if you don't have access to healthcare, it's really just a bedrock for women's economic security. And that's, you know, a range of healthcare services.
We're learning how the gender pay gap and lack of access to healthcare are affecting women here in Georgia. Woola Dawson is also with us. She works at the Feminist Women's Health Center in Atlanta. Woola, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So you were hearing a little bit about what she was talking about, big picture stats. But how about for you? What is an average day like at the Feminist Women Health Center?
Sure. So we provide comprehensive gynecological care. So that means that we have people come and get wellness exams. They can have GYN exams. We have STI testing and treatment, HIV testing and counseling, all kinds of the full range of family planning and emergency contraception. We also have a long history of being a place that's accessible for LGBT folks. So folks who are gender nonconforming and want to come and get a GYN exam, we are a place where you can come and do that as well.
And how about reproductive health care specifically?
Right. So we do the full range of abortion care, right? So we have offer medical and surgical abortions as far along as it is into the second trimester allowed here in the state of Georgia, which is 21 weeks. So people come from all over the state to see us, right? Because most counties do not have abortion providers that will go as far along as we do. And a lot of the people that we serve, 75% of them would identify as being in poverty. So a lot of folks come to us because we're the only place that can really provide the services that they need. So we don't provide the full range of care every day, but on the days that we have abortion services, our parking lot is full. We have protesters across the street, sometimes with megaphones. And folks come with their stories telling us about the waiting period where they live or other barriers. Many people receive discounts just because they can't afford the procedures that they get. So we work with some partners, and we also have a sliding scale for our own services that we provide.
So Feminist Women's Health Center, that's a loaded word in our culture now, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
Has it become code for access to birth control and abortions despite all of the other services that you offer?
Well, I think what's important to us is that we believe that families should have options and that we are here to provide this really important need. And the word isn't that important. You know, we are here to support the people who need these services. I think it gets tricky, right? Like, feminist means something different to different folks. The people who need healthcare just need healthcare. Mm. And there are people who are really committed to forcing people to be parents and making it harder for parents that are already parents to take care of the kids that they have and can't see the full spectrum of what it means to bring a child into this world beyond this one decision.
Well, you're talking very much to the politics in Georgia, especially around women's health care. Shilpa, birth control, abortion, some very hot button issues here. So what are some of the obstacles to women's health care here in Georgia?
I think at the end of the day, there's an effort to really set women back and sort of try to ensure that they don't have access to everything they need. And so I think we really want to think about, what does access to high quality care look like? Is that family planning? Is that access to abortion? Is it better, you know, maternal and prenatal care? Is it access to federal Title X funding, which is everything from cancer screenings to pregnancy testing? And so I think it's critical for Georgian and folks in the state to have access to that full spectrum of care. And there's really no way to disconnect access to health care and access to economic security. Reproductive justice, economic justice, those things are go hand in hand. And I think if we try to think about the economy of the country, the economy of the South, the economy of Georgia, there is no way to think about growing those opportunities and having families that are thriving without really centering a conversation around access to health care.
How do unwanted pregnancies impact women's income?
Yeah, we did a study a couple years ago really looking at labor mobility and looked at, you know, some of the state laws and the waiting periods and the other things. And it's statistically significant. The states that are hostile to women, the states that have these really these out-of-touch laws on access to abortion and contraception are states that have a disproportionate impact on women's ability to thrive. And so it really impacts the mobility of women to move around and to be successful. And so I think, you know, connecting the dots and connecting the economic story here is really critical.
So you've done comparative studies in other states?
We've looked at different states and looked at some of the sort of cross-cutting issues. And I think we feel pretty strongly that access to reproductive health care is crucial to this conversation, and that the research has showed that you have greater earning potential and job mobility in states where reproductive health care is more available. And if you compare that to other states, you see the difference. And I think Georgia and many states in the South have a situation right now where women's earnings and mobility is really being constricted by the lack of sort of true equitable health care access.
Well, we know that the Women's Right to Know law from 2005 required counseling and a waiting period, which abortion activists and doctors agree create hurdles for abortion seekers. What are you doing as an organization to create legislative priorities for people who seek reproductive health care?
So there's a United States Supreme Court ruling 2 years ago that all abortion restrictions should have provable health benefits. So we're so excited because we're bringing that campaign to Georgia. So if we put this into Georgia law to be in keeping with the United States government, then that would take down this interference between doctors and patients. Many, many people come to this procedure for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it has to do with fetal anomaly. Sometimes these are really difficult choices that people have to make, right? And so, you know, being offered to hear the heartbeat, it's obviously slated towards a bias towards not ending pregnancies. So we're super excited. It's really hopeful that we're starting this effort to bring folks together. There's the Amplify campaign, which is a citywide level of doing similar abortion out loud work. And we're excited about the momentum that's happening and how much more comfortable people are talking about this care and their own experiences. So we just had a public hearing to launch the campaign to enact the Whole Women's Health Act here in the state of Georgia.
So I'm curious about this because oftentimes when women's issues are discussed, you know, and I'm putting quotes around, air quotes mm-hmm. around that in my hands, this is considered a matter of identity politics. This is not considered to be a national priority, certainly not on the legislative agenda right now. What's your case to political leadership to treat it differently?
If we care about an economy, and if we care about being successful globally, and if we care about being a leader in the world, then we have to make sure that workers in this country and in every state have access to all the policies and the programs that would make them able to thrive and be part of an innovative, dynamic economy. Those policies have been lagging, whether it's increasing the minimum wage, ensuring workers have access to paid sick days, affordable child care, you know, the ability to care for themselves, a sick parent. All of these pieces are critical to having a dynamic economy. And so if we care about having a strong economy, if we care about making sure the workers around the country have the skills and the wages to thrive, then this is what you need to do to get there. And the misogyny and the patriarchy that are sort of embedded in these policies, it's not the time anymore. We really have to take these issues head on. These are not women's issues. These are family issues. These are workers' issues. And really just own them and figure out a path to getting these things across the finish line.
But the political will, as you're suggesting, doesn't seem to be there. People are much more considered with things that they consider more immediate pocketbook issues, or issues like abortion, that these are culture war issues. I'm still trying to understand how to make the case to the larger public that this is in their best interest.
I think having a strong, dynamic economy where everyone can thrive and succeed is in the interest of every single citizen and every single person that sort of wants to contribute to make sure that families are able to get ahead and get by. I think that at times we get stuck on buzzwords and people go to their partisan corners. But I think if you ask people, do you think women and families deserve to make a living wage? Do you think that we should ensure that people have access to care for themselves or their loved ones if they're sick? Do you think that women deserve to get paid the same for the same work as their colleagues that are men? I think the answers to those questions are yes. And so if we can sort of dig a little bit deeper, ask the hard questions, push lawmakers for real solutions, not just sort of the talking point or the half solution, I think we can get there. But I think it's really up to us and up to women everywhere to demand these policies and to demand these solutions. And to do that for themselves, but for their families. I'd say again, these aren't women's issues. Access to healthcare is a family issue, and it's critical to the economic security of our country.
Shilpa Fadke, she is Vice President of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Wula Dawson of the Feminist Women's Health Center in Atlanta, thank you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, how three Georgia women are chipping away at the glass ceiling. It's on Second Thought.